everybody. How you doing? Welcome to the show. If you're just joining us, rolling out of the rack at 7:14 on a Thursday morning. JR and Hammer with you, and I was thinking to myself, you know, you'd never use the term aggregate except when we're talking about Champions League. That's it. That's the only time we use aggregate. But we can use it with the show because in the first hour with Simmer off this week, that Hammer, you and I handle it. And then on aggregate, we add, in this case, our TSN legal analyst, Eric Macromello. How do you feel about being an aggregate member of the show this morning, Eric?
You know what? I am just happy to be nominated, to be honest with you. The fact that I'm included, most of my life, I haven't been invited to any parties. In fact, I've been uninvited to parties. People say, look, there's a party this Saturday. Do us a favor and don't show up. By the way, I was listening to the show, and I have to say, Matt, I was a bit surprised, if not disgusted by you.
What?
If I'm being honest. When you guys were talking about, you know, no hitters and perfect games, and then you started to say, you know, I can't imagine a worse way to lose a perfect game. Well, maybe, I don't know, what'd you say?
Maybe drop third strike.
Yeah, no. Hello, knock, knock, who's there? Armando Galarraga meets Jim Joyce.
Yeah, great point.
That's the worst way to lose a perfect game.
On an umpire
when you've actually thrown a perfect game.
You've
thrown it. And Jim Joyce says, safe. That's the worst way to lose it.
I'm taking this as the team losing the perfect game.
Or the guy.
Not an outside influencer being the umpiring crew.
That excuse was so aggregate. It was crazy aggregate. It made no sense at all. You're a baseball guy, okay? I've seen you as a bat boy at many, many games, despite the restraining order. You know your baseball. Armando Galarraga is it. Again, the other thing I want to say here is, Matt, you made a good point. I'm drinking a Starbucks Venti Pike, but Venti means 20. So I don't know why it's called a 20. I was going to order a Grande, but it's not a large, despite the fact that it's called a Grande. I don't understand why Starbucks does this to me, but I go there, obviously, because it's more expensive.
Are you good?
I'm fine.
Hang on. I want you to get every, because I know you're mad. I know you went to bed last night mad. I don't know if you slept.
I didn't sleep.
I don't know if you slept because you and your fellow Hab fans are bitter about the loss last night. So I wanted to offer you the opportunity to kind of get it all off your chest in the opening couple of minutes of when you joined us on the air. So go ahead. Floor is yours.
One thing, you know, and look, don't worry about it. I was listening to you coming in because I've been wide awake. I didn't sleep. But I PVR'd the Sens game and watched that afterwards just to make sure that, you know, I watched the game so that we understand the nuances of that game. But as I was watching it, two things occurred to me. First, Pierre Maguire and I went to the same high school. I didn't know that.
What?
The other thing, we actually went to the same high school back in Montreal, although he didn't graduate from there because he was expelled, but we still went to the same high school. And as far as the Habs games, I'm not bitter, JR. Although I had two cigars last night, which suggested that I was getting a little bit nervous, if not angry. I'm not bitter as much as I am disappointed in this team, but it's a Jekyll and Hyde situation. And I don't know which team is showing up. It's like that girl you date on Seinfeld, good light, bad light. You don't know who's showing up, depending on the lighting. Mm. And the lighting last night wasn't very good.
They're a two-faced team. That's what it is.
Wow.
Your Seinfeld reference.
All right, we don't want to go too deep down the Montreal rabbit
hole. I'm done.
No, but I do want to ask you one question. You know, as a guy who watches all the games and your kids are fully involved, is there anything to the whole Brendan, in your estimation, anything to the Brendan Gallagher theory of Gallagher leaves the lineup and boom, they lose 4 out of 5 games?
I don't think so based upon what I've seen with this team this season. It doesn't seem to turn on one player. It seems to turn on whether there's a sufficient group effort. And that begins with an aggressive forecheck. And you had it against the Leafs. And Gallagher didn't play that game. The Leafs, as you know, according to the data, they're a pretty good team. And the Canadians were able to win that game. I don't think it turns on a single player, JR. I just think it turns on a team that, for whatever reason, seems at times to be unprepared to start a game. And it's bizarre to me because they've got the pieces there. But for whatever reason, they just can't seem to put it together. And it's disappointing only because the complement of players should yield a different result, if not an aggregate result.
You know, I had already penned in Montreal as the fourth place team in the Canadian division and a playoff spot. Do I need to get the whiteout out?
So this is because you're not a Habs fan. If
no,
you were
I'm
a Habs
not.
Fan, you would have used a pencil.
I know, but I am an unbiased, impartial observer to all of this. And I had put it in pen. I said four Canadian playoff teams are set. Toronto, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Montreal. Mark it down. I still feel very strongly about Montreal. It's 4-point lead, 3 games in hand. So, I mean, they've got it all. It's all right in front of them. They just have to grab a couple of these games against Calgary. But from what I saw, and I would flip it over when the Ottawa game went to a commercial breaker in the intermissions. That did not appear to me, and so I did not see as much of the game as you did. That did not appear to me to be a team that showed a whole lot of desperation in terms of snuffing out the playoff hopes of the one team that has any chance of catching them.
Statistically, the Canadians have a reasonably good chance of clinching a playoff spot. But the way they're playing, the inconsistent manner in which they're playing, plus the obvious difficulties they have when they match up against the Flames, suggests that a playoff space or a spot is by no means assured for the Canadians. They just, JR, they just have problems playing, well, most teams except for Vancouver, if we're being honest about it. And you still have to give some credit to the Flames last night. I mean, the Flames came out extremely aggressive on the forecheck and they played really well. And Markstrom, while he's maybe not the greatest goalie in the world, my goodness, he's a large human being that covers a lot of space in that net.
I see that you suggested he was wearing Garth Snow's equipment.
Yeah, I was asking for a friend if he had borrowed Garth Snow's equipment. I mean, he's a big guy. You can barely see the net.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's crazy.
Anyway, 4-1 is the final. Flames beat the Habs. We can talk a little bit more about that coming up. But the Sens fall 3-2 to the Winnipeg Jets, a game that was 1-1 into the third period. And then Winnipeg got a power play goal early on. And this is probably the old TSN butterball turning point of the game.
Shabbat gives it away. Nate Thompson clears it out. Now here's a race for it. Busting in. Here's a chance. Scores! Shorthanded goal. Everybody hesitated when the puck came back out to center. The guy who didn't was Trevor Lewis, and he gets the shorty, 3-1 Winnipeg.
That stands up as the game winner as Josh Norris scores very late in the game on a 5-on-3 to make it 3-2. But that shorthanded goal, that was a killer. A lot of feedback on Thomas Chabot on that particular play. I know that DJ Smith said after the game that he's using the royal we didn't make a hard play along the boards as the puck popped up in the air. It looked like in live time that Chabot casualed it, and it was kind of like just played it casually he has been accused from time to time of some of the fan base of playing this season. Just not a sense of urgency all of the time. But when you see a different view of it, I think he loses the idea of where the puck is. I think he thinks it's above him and going to fall at his feet, and it's actually way in behind him. All that being said, if you're not 100% sure where it is, you have to think defensively first. And what is your first instinct going to be? You've got to go, I got to go cut off that guy that seems to be skating really fast for some reason in behind me. Oh, that's maybe where the puck is. So I do lay some of the blame for that. I was 100% of the blame of like my initial reaction in live time is, what the heck? Thomas Chabot there, come on. But when I saw a replay from the other side of the ice, it did change my opinion a little bit. All that to say, that was not a strong play on his part. And unfortunately, Matt Murray in his first start was unable to cover up for him as well, because there was a lot of Trevor Lewis. Nobody's going to accuse him of being the next Mario Lemieux. That guy goes in and there was a lot of net to shoot out, and he did not miss for the game. Did you end up being able to see that replay?
No, I did. I watched the game, right? After I watched the Habs game, after I was able to settle down a bit. And my initial reaction is it didn't look very good. But then on the replay, I just thought he lost sight of the puck. Ultimately, though, I can't blame a guy who in that game played 6 minutes more than everybody else, right? Josh Brown played 20 minutes. Chabot at 26 minutes and 39 seconds. I'm sorry. He's being used so much that two things happen. There's fatigue. There's mental fatigue and physical fatigue. And also when you play that much, there isn't the same sense of urgency. Psychologically, you say to yourself, well, hey, if this doesn't work out, it's okay. I have a lot of other game to play. He's just playing so much. So you live by the sword, JR, and you die by the sword.
Is 26 minutes too much, though? I mean, Thomas Chabot has been at times at 30 and upwards of
33 and 34 minutes. Like 26 minutes for him is a walk in the park for the most part. That's what he should average. That's what he should play.
But the issue is with this compressed schedule, it's not a walk through the park. He's sprinting through the park nonstop. They're playing so many games within a short period of time. We have to remind ourselves, these guys are human beings. I mean, they are going to mentally tire when they play that much. And these are not soft minutes. These are hard minutes in really important situations during the game. I guess what I'm saying is this, is I understand that Shabbat has had some issues of late. He's made some glaring errors. But he'd be the first guy to tell you, yeah, that was stupid. That was a brain freeze. And if you ask him, well, why did it happen? Maybe he'd say to you, I'm tired.
Yeah. Physical fatigue leads to mental mistakes. That was my takeaway at the end of the day on that. But again, I'll defer to the point of for Thomas Shabbat, that was not a typical Thomas Shabbat ice time night. You know, that is an atypical night. But all that to say, it was not a good look. And for a lot or some of the fan base, at least, that has been their overarching concern mm-hmm. about Shabbat this year is that there are times in which he appears. And I think at the end of the day, he cares. There is no doubt in my mind he cares a lot. He's a good team player, all that other stuff. But there are times in which you'd love to kind of just shake him a little bit and say, just play everything a little faster than you do right now. So there is that part of it. But the giveaways, I made this point in the first hour. If you go down the list and the NHL keeps track of giveaways in every game, and so there is a total at the end of the year, they total it all up. Thomas Shabbat had 4 giveaways last night. And a lot of people look at giveaways and go, oh man, that guy gave the puck away again. Well, listen, if you have the puck on your stick a lot, if you're amongst the best players in the game, you're also going to lead the league or be among the league leaders in giveaways. That just stands to reason. Mm-hmm. No one is perfect. Everyone, even Wayne Gretzky, would give away the puck on occasion. He always had the puck whenever he tried to give it to someone on his team. Sometimes a player on the other team would intercept it. That would be a giveaway. So the best players often or always will lead the league in giveaways. That being said, Shabbat has had more than his fair share this year. That combined with the odd occasion when it looks like he plays it a little too casual, that has just led to some angst amongst some in the fan base. They're looking at it, and I know you don't like to equate paycheck to performance, but everybody looks at, hey, we're paying $8 million to this guy. He's got to perform better.
You know, look, paycheck necessarily influences expectation. Absolutely. But when I look at Shabbat, what comes to mind is what was introduced with Kawhi leaving. Kawhi leaving because I want to go to LA, and that's load management. And you have to ask yourself, in a situation like this, where you're playing so many games, so many competitive, important games within a short time frame, is there a value in managing minutes more aggressively, knowing that this team is not going to be a playoff team, knowing that you need to continue to develop the young guys, like Docker, for example? You get in more than 15 minutes last night. And by the way, he looked really good. Load management, I think, has got to be a principle, particularly this season in the NHL, that has to be top of mind for these coaches, JR.
I agree with you 100%, but DJ Smith said, within the last couple of weeks on one of Thomas Shabbat's, when he was on a streak of playing close to, if not over 30 minutes, and he was asked specifically about the minutes that Thomas Shabbat is playing, and he goes, and I'd be paraphrasing his words, but it was along the lines of, it doesn't make sense, but he gets better the more that he plays. And I'll be quite honest with you, I don't believe that. I don't know that many fans that watch all of the games believe that as well, that Thomas Shabbat mm-hmm. playing over 30 minutes a game makes a better Thomas Shabbat. Now, it's a bit of a rose among thorns as far as that defense on a lot of nights goes, where, listen, a Thomas Shabbat at 70% is better than a lot of guys that they can that they had been putting out there. But I agree with you 100%, like with a lot of other things. Again, this is a year in which there's no expectations. This is a year in which if you don't win a game because you end up playing a rookie and he makes a mistake at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world. This would be the year, and these would be the types of games, especially as we're toward the end here, of don't play the guy as much. Play, you know, and Jacob Bernard Docker, okay, it's his first game. Do you want to ease him in? Okay, I get all that other part of it. But just spread the minutes out a little bit more, right? But play Eric Brandstrom more. Play Victor Mete played 5 more than he played the other night. But he only played 14 at the end of the night. Play him 18. Play Brännström 20. You know, play Shabbat 23 or 24, to your point of load management, because these games aren't that important. Coaches and teams are wired to win. I understand that all part of it. And Thomas Shabbat being on the ice gives the sense he's their best defenseman, and it's not even close. I understand all that part of it. But there's also a part of just making sure that it's a development year, giving other players opportunities to develop. And that's getting the short shrift this year.
JR, the Sens this season are playing with house money. That's my perspective from the outside looking in. So when you're playing with house money, you have to ask yourself, okay, how do we define success for this season? What will constitute a successful season for the Ottawa Senators? And it's three words: development, development, and development. And there seems to be this sense of urgency in each individual game to win. And I understand the need to win. I understand the need to walk away from a game victorious. Everybody wants to win. This is how we're wired, how players are wired, how fans are wired. But the Ottawa Senators have a unique opportunity. They have an incredibly young lineup that would benefit from an even spread of minutes. And there comes a point in time where you've got Shabbat on the ice for 6 or 7 minutes more than everybody else. You have to ask yourself, as the Sens, is that the right move if we are to progress this season to the point where we could say we had a successful season? And that, again, goes back to development. That's the thing, is that this is a unique season for the Sens. They can pretty much dress my mom on D. It's not going to matter, right? It's about development.
How's her pivot, by the way?
It's not bad, except when she drinks a box of wine before 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that affects everybody. Jacob Bernard Docker played his first game last night, played over 15 minutes. Here is his thought on his NHL debut.
You know, it's a game that I prepared my whole life for. So, you know, obviously I'm going to be a little bit nervous whether I find out an hour before or whether I find out a day before. So, it was a little weird, obviously, finding out that close to the game. But I think, like I said so many times, guys did a great job making me feel comfortable.
So the plan was not for Jacob Bernard Docker to play, but Nikita Zaitsev, who had sat out practice, I guess now 2 days ago, the thought was he was going to come back. But indications came early in the day yesterday that maybe he wasn't going to be good to go. So they actually gave him the heads up of, hey, it could happen tonight, kid. So apparently he, went back to the hotel in the afternoon, tried to have the pregame nap, couldn't sleep, too nervous, and then he found out for sure he was going to play about an hour before the game. If you're going to play your first NHL game in which you're going to be nervous, it's probably this is the ideal situation where you don't find out for sure until a half hour to an hour before the game that you're going to play, because you don't have a whole heck of a lot of time to get nervous, because boom, you're out on the ice, you're playing the game. And when he did get out there, I thought he came as advertised, man. He is steady as she goes. There's nothing that stands out about his game. He's not going to be an end-to-end Thomas Shabbat kind of player. But boy, oh boy, is he a perfect player for what the Ottawa Senators need on their defense right now. Just a very steady influence, makes smart plays. He's obviously a good skater. He's decent with the puck on his stick, but there were no panic moves last night. There was a play where he really didn't have anywhere to go with the puck. The forecheck was coming in with him. He just waited it out and then just made a nice little flip pass to the other side of the ice to his D partner, and boom, out of the zone. It was a real subtle play, but that's what he did the entire night. That was a really impressive NHL debut for JBD, I thought.
Unlike me at a high school dance, he did not look out of place, JR. He played 15 solid minutes. I think he blocked a couple of shots, but he looked like he belonged. So that was really nice. And he didn't try and do too much. He stayed within the four corners of who he is as a player. And he just struck me when I was watching that game last night as, okay, this guy has the potential to be yet another solid addition to this team, another young player on a very young team that is filled with talent who can really contribute down the line. So when you see him play, I don't know how you can't feel optimistic.
Yeah, for sure. And Pierre McGuire asked him a couple of days ago, like, how many games will it take the Sens, in his opinion, to watch Bernard Docker and Pinto, but to a more extent a developing defenseman, how many games do you need before you have a real good sense of whether this guy is going to be a for sure NHLer for you next year? Because that's what this is all about. This is about assessing in terms of what you're going to have to do in the offseason as far as your defense goes for next season. And he said 8 to 10 games. So they've got about a dozen games left now. So Bernard Docker ends up playing any or all of them, or the majority of them or all of them, they're going to get that 8 to 10 game snapshot of what he is capable of. And in Pierre McGuire's opinion, they're going to know whether he is going to be at that point a full, you know, they can pen him in for next year as a full-time NHL player or not. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's enough time?
I mean, look, I think, because I don't know if it's enough time necessarily, but it goes back to that initial point in that you have this opportunity as an organization to audition these players in a very meaningful way. So that's specifically what you do. And if that means taking a few minutes away from a guy who is quite clearly mentally fatigued in Shabbat, then you do it. This is a wonderful opportunity for the organization. And based upon what we saw last night, there's a pretty reasonable argument that, you know what, you got to give him more minutes, more playing time and more games, because there's a real possibility here that this kid's here to stay.
What's really interesting, and you went into how the ice time was divvied up last night, that Shabbat led the way at 26 minutes, which may or may not have been too much. But that second on the list was Josh Brown at 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the six defensemen that dressed last night, and if Zaitsev is ready to come back for the game in Montreal on Saturday, who in all likelihood should be the odd man out, it should be Josh Brown. But there he was last night among the other five defensemen. He had the most ice time. So it'll be interesting if Zaitsev is ready to go, and all indications are it's not a serious injury, ready to go on Saturday. You would think they would want to leave Bernard Docker in there. Again, there was nothing last night to suggest that he was overwhelmed by the moment and should come out. But who else is going to come out in that situation,
well,
right? If you're going to keep the left side, yeah.
I think the guy that comes out is Victor Mete. I think he comes out because you know what you have in him. It's well documented. He's playing the NHL now for four seasons. Came in young. There's a book on him. You know precisely what he contributes. And what you need to do is assess some of the other guys who perhaps you don't yet have a book on.
Wow. I would listen. Victor Mete and Josh Brown couldn't be two different players. One's a right shot, one's a left shot, one's huge, mm-hmm. one's small, one's a puck mover, one's more of a defender. But Victor Mete, I think, has a chance. Josh Brown, I think enough has been seen of him this year to say, at best, he's a marginal NHL player. So in my estimation, and let alone they love the left shots on the left side, right shots on the right side. If it's a right shot defenseman that's coming in and Zaitsev, and a right shot guy has to come out, it's got to be Brown. Hammer, does it not? It's got to be Josh Brown.
Absolutely has to be Brown. I think that's a no-doubter for the coaching staff. And just to the point of keeping Bernard Docker in, what impressed me the most about his game last night was he got hit, and he got hit a lot in the first period. And he talked about it post-game. But it's how he learned and adapted to that so quickly. Because after that, he hardly got touched. He got to the puck quicker, moved the puck quicker, understood where his partner was where the outlet was, what the play was once he got to the puck. And that's what impressed me the most from Jacob Bernard-Docker's game.
He is a quick study. As he said, I think somebody asked him, like, what was the one difference you noticed? Like, you're always asked that ahead of time, and you give the trite answer. But then you actually go through it and you play a game, and he said, everybody's bigger and faster. They're bigger and faster, and and he learned that lesson, as you said, quickly, right? I mean, as a defenseman, the last thing you want to do is just keep getting nailed time after time after time, and if you can move that puck quickly, you're not going to get hit as much, and he learned that lesson pretty quickly. So it's going to be interesting to watch, because, look, with this defense, with this coaching staff and the way they've done it with the defense this year, it's an obvious answer to me. Yet they haven't gone down the obvious road before. I will say the one thing in defense of Josh Brown, and I kind of threw out last night, if Ottawa opened next season with a decor of Shabbat and JBD, Brännström and Zub, Mete and Zaitsev, so that could be the sixth defenseman on Saturday, how would you feel about that? Would you love it, or would it scare the hell out of you? Those were my two options. It was a yay or nay. And it was 71-29 people said they would love it.
What?
Yes.
It would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
No, I here's the thing is that when the Sens play the Canadiens, you're saying you want Victor Mete in the lineup. I don't know, based on what I've seen from him over the past number of seasons, the extent to which he'll be effective in containing big guys like Anderson, Perry, Staal, Toffoli. he's going to have his hands full.
But that goes to the point of, don't you want to see in Victor Mete whether he can, again, you got
to. This is what I'm telling you. There's a book on him.
But this
we
is
know
a no
he
lose.
Can.
This is a no lose for Ottawa, right? Again, no expectations. If Victor Mete, first of all, is thrown out. I know you've seen him in Montreal, but this coaching staff now has him in Ottawa. He's not in Montreal. He's in Ottawa. He's playing with Ottawa players now. Put him up against these bigger HAB forwards and find out what this guy is all about. Sitting him in the press box for his third game in an Ottawa uniform, how do you find out about the guy? You can't just go by the tape in Montreal.
No, but I mean, if you're looking to put together, a complement, a group of defensemen to face the Canadians that you believe will be effective, I think a guy like Brown might be more effective in that game against the Canadians. Insofar as Mete goes, you do want to see how he fits in on this team. Although I would be surprised if they would learn something the Canadians didn't learn.
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
And I'm not saying that I don't want him. I'm not saying he shouldn't play for the Sens down the line. The Sens shouldn't re-sign, but that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is for this game against the Canadians, I'm just not sure if his style of play is well-suited for that big match.
I think it's going to come down. I think this is a competition. Erik Brännström versus Victor Mete. And which one? Because I don't think you can have both, because that blue line that you just listed there, it does, that scares the crap out of me for next year. In a team that is supposedly supposed to challenge for a playoff spot, that blue line does not scream to me playoff contender.
No, and I don't, and I threw that out there because those, as it sits right now, would be the six available guys that I think. I don't, for a second, think that that's the way they're going to approach the offseason. I think we've all talked about the fact that they have to find a partner for Shabbat. And is JBD going to be the guy right away? Well, you know what? Even if he looks great and he looked really solid, depth on defense, having another solid having another top four guy, I mean, you can't go wrong. They can never have enough defensemen. They absolutely have to go out and get another defenseman because, yeah, I was surprised it came back. And again, people have been looking for it. The steamships are now gone for the most part. The Coburns and the Gudbransons of the world, those guys are all gone. And everybody loves the fact that these new guys can move the puck and can skate a little bit. It's a nice, pleasant difference. But at the end of the day, part of being a defenseman is defending. And part of defending is to have a little bit of sandpaper and some size and some ability to move guys. I agree with you. Having two smaller defensemen, I don't know whether that's long range, whether that's going to work or not. All right.
That's precisely why Mete had the fewest minutes last night.
Right. All right. We'll take a break. Your thoughts on that, always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200. Tweet us at TSN 1200. We had an early morning visit with Pierre McGuire. We'll revisit that with you coming up after 8 o'clock. We'll talk some CFL. We're getting close to the time when a decision is going to be made on postponing at least the start of the season. We're going to get the very latest on what's going on with the league with Dave Naylor, who covers the CFL for TSN. He'll join us coming up after 9 o'clock. All right, we'll take a break. Still to come, TSN 1200's $1,000 minute before 8 o'clock. Stand by for your cue to text on that. And when we return, we're going to hear from JT Miller of the Vancouver Canucks. He's got some serious reservations about what the NHL is asking from he and his team regarding a return to play as early as tomorrow night. We'll hear from him next on TSN 1200.
Here's the main event of the evening.
Yes, it is.
Let's get ready to rumble!
It's time for the TSN 1200 Draft Lottery Simulator.
Yes, it's edition number 3. We do it every year after the trade deadline comes and goes. It's all, there's a little bit of interest this year in the finish of the season. Not like other years in Ottawa where it's been, oh my God, the draft can't get here soon enough. But the draft will get here at the end of July. Ottawa will have a high pick again. How high will it be? That's what the Take Accept No Imitation TSN 1200 Draft Lottery Simulator is all about. So Ian Mendez had the first crack at it on Tuesday, delivered the first pick to his hometown Vancouver Canucks. Yeah, no coincidence there. Erik Makramela stepped in yesterday, and Ian had the third pick for Ottawa. Erik delivered the second pick to the Sens yesterday. So as we do it today, 3-2, what's the next number that usually follows? 3-2-1. All right, the odds right now. Buffalo has the best odds. Ottawa second. Seattle, as we know, is locked into the number three spot. No matter how these standings, the expansion team is locked three. Right now, New Jersey actually is a four and Anaheim is five. All right, Eric, you ready to go?
I am, my man. Man, you so aggregated crazy. Here we go. Ready? And simulation. All right, we got our top five.
There we go.
Okay, very good. I love the sound effects, Matt, unless you were mouthing that, which would have been fantastic. So I got the top five. By the way, just as a side note, Mendez, right, he lied when he was on. You remember he had Vancouver's favorite team.
Yes.
In the first, and I just don't like people that do that. All right, all top five picks going to the Canadians.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
What a shocker. So,
number five, the Detroit Red Wings.
Oh, again, losers.
Yeah. Number four, the Seattle Kraken.
All right.
Number three, your Ottawa Senators.
All right.
Sorry, man.
That's
at least it's not real life. And number one, because we're skipping two, because you made a very good point yesterday, that one should be announced first because one will be announced when you announce two.
Yes.
Very smart. So number one is the Anaheim Ducks.
What? So Buffalo's two?
So Buffalo at two.
Right. Anaheim. Yeah. I can't think of a worse place. Well, I mean, if I'm a hockey player, I don't mind going to play there. It's bright, nice, bright sunshine, close to Disneyland and all that good stuff. But, yeah, you don't want to park the number one pick in the draft in Anaheim. They'll disappear.
No, you know, because I always think back to when, I guess the arena, the Honda Center, is in Orange County, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they won the Stanley Cup, I remember the stories that the players came out and it was like, they didn't win anything.
No.
There was no one riding. There was no one killing someone else. There were no cars on fire.
There was no one riding.
There was nothing. Just one person offering another person some popcorn.
Oh, dear. All right. So there we go. We've had two threes for Ottawa and one two. The results of the official draft lottery simulator through 3 days. Okay.
Now, Jared, hang on. Will the aggregate results,
yes,
will that have an effect on the real lottery?
Correct.
Will Gary Bettman and Daly say, okay, this is okay?
Correct. In totality, when we add everything up, because we keep track day by day, in totality, whatever comes up the most is what Ottawa gets ended up slotting in for. It's weird. But that's the way the Bettman works. He accepts what we do here in Ottawa. The tiny perfect commission.
He's a nice man. He's
all
nice.
Right. I want to play some comments. This is about 3 minutes worth of comments from JT Miller of the Vancouver Canucks. As everyone is well aware, the Canucks have been through hell, quite frankly. Almost every one of their players, save for, I believe, four or five, have had COVID-19. The team hasn't played a game since March the 24th. That's more than 3 weeks ago. Earlier this week, some players finally got out of COVID protocols. They have been practicing in small groups. There are 7 players left on the list. 4 more are expected to exit the list today. This is also the day the team is expected to have its first and only full practice before they play their first game tomorrow, which will kick off 19 games in 31 days. Is this right? Is this fair? JT Miller is one of the few players who didn't end up getting COVID, and he had some very candid comments about this yesterday.
How ready do you feel? How ready is it reasonable to expect you and your teammates to be for those games?
I don't really feel ready at all, I'm being completely honest. Trying to use a couple skates here to get my hockey senses back. The legs aren't going to be there immediately, obviously. And I can't really speak on behalf of my teammates that, you know, have had it, COVID. So it's going to be tough for them to bounce back this quickly and try to play. So I'm just hoping everybody can stay as healthy as they can here.
What was your reaction, JT, when you saw the schedule that the NHL presented for you guys?
I know that everybody's got a job to do, but to expect pretty much our entire team to be ready to play and one practice in a pregame skate is a little bit hard to comprehend.
Do you worry about the health of players who are coming back from that and have been thrown into a schedule where they're asked to play 5 games in the first 7 days, for instance?
I mean, that's all I worry about. And it's kind of frustrating, if I'm being 100% honest with you. And we try to talk about the number one priority is the players' health and their family's safety. And this is, it's almost impossible to achieve that with what they've asked us to do here on our return. So, like I said, I can't speak on behalf of the guys that have had COVID, but I've talked to my teammates a lot, and this hasn't been obviously that easy. There's different for everybody, and you know, for them to try to come back and play like I just talked to is going to be very challenging and not very safe if you're asking me. And I'm sure that there's other people that would agree with that. So I'm planning on playing Friday and trying to play a good game for my team. So I guess I could focus on that.
Should you be playing?
It's a hard question. Brutally honestly, I think that, you know, we're going to need more time than this to come back and play hockey. Even the guys that didn't get it were not ready to play. So it's a decision that was made. And as of now, we're going to be, I guess, ready to play. But I without going too much farther into it, I mean, that's all I can really say at this point is it seems like a very high hurdle to try to jump over to try to jam 19 NHL games against good hockey teams in the months.
All right, there's a part of the comments yesterday of JT Miller of the Vancouver Canucks. It will be challenging and, quote, not very safe, in his opinion, for the Canucks to have to do what they're being asked to do. Now, to bring everybody up to date, there was a meeting last night among the players about this situation. The PA is going to get involved and the NHL. There is going to be another meeting today with the thought that perhaps they may look at this schedule again and maybe change things. But as it stands now, they are expected to have a first practice today and play games starting tomorrow, 5-7, 19-31. Eric Macromello, what do you think about what JT Miller had to say?
You know, on my Smash It Show Offside that has over 5 listeners, I've been quite complimentary of the NHL and the other 3 leagues in the manner in which they've handled the pandemic. My hat tip to them. I mean, I tried to organize ice time for my son in the summer with his buddies, and just getting, you know, 14 parents together and getting the ice was impossible. So the NHL has done an amazing job. In this moment, however, I believe they're a bit too ambitious. COVID swept through this team and it affects everybody differently. But we do know that when players come back, they're typically not the same for a while at the very least. It's a lot to ask of these players to play 19 games in 31 days. It's entirely unfair. If the players were in great shape, it would still feel a bit unfair. Coming off the heels of COVID, and for some, it will have a lingering effect throughout this season, perhaps next season, perhaps the rest of their lives. We don't know. It affects everybody differently. It's a lot to ask, JR. And I think the NHL needs to revisit it. I think engaging the NHLPA is the right thing to do. That's the first thing that occurred to me, that the union and Don Fehr must get involved, and they must negotiate a settlement that appears to be a fair compromise. You get the games in as many as you can, but still at the same time, try and preserve the health and the safety of these players, because some will get injured as well if they're not ready to play, and some just probably shouldn't be playing.
Is there any, from a legal point of view, from a challenge from the Players Association, if they back the Canucks players on this, is there any recourse, any means they can do to, if the NHL insists that they play, that they can withdraw their services, as it were, and say, we're not going to play. We don't think it's right. It's not safe.
The NHL has the right to insist the Canuck organization to play. They cannot force individual players to play. It's quite clear, based upon the memo that was circulated before the season started, that players have the right to opt out as a result of COVID. Player health and safety within the four corners of an employment context. This is what the thing is. Don't look at this, at these guys as hockey players. Look at them as employees. And their health to this, employers are held to the same standards, no matter who they are. And the players have every right in the world individually say, look, I am not going to play and I am going to opt out. And that's their leverage here. By assembling last night, by assembling again today and engaging in discussion, my expectation here, my assumption is they're telling the league, if you don't soften the schedule, then we are not going to play.
Yeah, and to be clear, none of the players have said publicly that they are going to opt out. So this is where the conundrum lies, right? They don't want to opt out. They want to play the games. They just don't want to play the games the way the NHL has scheduled at this point with, again, how quickly they're starting up. They haven't played a game in 3 weeks, and many of them haven't been on the ice for over 2 weeks. And yet, after one practice and one game day skate, they're going to have to start playing games right away. And, yeah, the players don't feel very comfortable about that at all. And at the this is about, correct me if I'm wrong, this is about money at the end of the day. This is about these games being played so that a television, the team and the league can collect its television money, because it's fulfilled its obligation by presenting 56 games at the end of the day.
Absolutely. You know, you just wonder why the NHL is so insistent on ending the season when they're going to end it, perhaps a week after it's scheduled to end. And look, we understand the league is only generating revenue, or primarily generating revenue, by way of these media deals. That being said, every relationship has a defining moment. This is that defining moment. I suspect if the commissioner wasn't Gary Bettman, but was Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, who is so pro-player, who is so empathetic to the players and their cause, that we might see a different result here. I think it's incumbent on the NHL and Gary Bettman to say, look, this is a one instance, a unique, discrete event. We have to do something different and adapt in a different way.
All right, great point. We'll find out perhaps more today. Again, a meeting between the NHL, the Players Association, and the Canucks. Perhaps they might postpone the games for at least a few days. We'll find out today. All right, we'll take a quick break. Still to come, TSN 1200's $1,000 Minute. Would you like to play? Would you like the chance to potentially win $1,000 cash? We will take lucky texter number 39 right now at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. All right, texter number 39 at 12-1200 will play TSN 1200's $1,000 Minute. 10 questions, 60 seconds. You get them all right, it's $1,000 cash. We'll do that next on TSN 1200. Lucky texter number 39 this morning is Danny. How you doing, Danny?
Really good. How you doing, boys?
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, the contest works this way. I've got 10 questions. There's 60 seconds on the clock. You go 10 for 10. You win $1,000 cash. All right, $10 for every correct answer. If you don't know an answer, pass, and we'll circle back if we have time. I got to accept your first answer, okay? Can't change your mind in the middle of an answer. And you got to get in all 10 answers before the buzzer goes. No answering after the buzzer, okay? Seem good?
Let's do this. Let's
all right, you ready to go? Speak up nice and loud.
No, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Let's do this thing. All right, Danny is ready, everybody. We're going to go here in 3, 2, 1, go. True or false, Matt Murray has the most wins among Sens goalies this season?
False.
Within one, how many no-hitters have there been in baseball this season?
Three.
How many straight games had Connor Brown scored a goal in before last night?
Eight.
What team did Cal Ripken play his baseball career with?
Orioles.
What team did Wayne Gretzky end his career with?
Rangers.
Within 2 miles, how many miles in a marathon?
Oh, 26.2.
Name any player who scored an overtime goal for the Sens in the 2017 playoff run.
Mark Stone.
What sport does Jadeveon Clowney play?
Football.
Ottawa traded Ben Bishop to Tampa for what player?
Pass.
What country has two of the final four teams in the Champions League?
Pass.
Ottawa traded Ben Bishop to Tampa for what player?
Shoot.
Okay. All right. Ah, how soon we forget. All right. Let's review, Danny. Matt Murray does have the most wins among Sens goalies this year, so that was true. Within one, how many no-hitters? You said three. It's two, so you're within one. Connor Brown had an 8-game goal scoring streak. You're right there. Cal Ripken played with the Orioles. Correct. Wayne Gretzky ended with the Rangers. Correct. You were dead on with the marathon, 26 miles. Name any player had an OT goal. You said Mark Stone. He didn't. It was Dion, Bobby Ryan, 2, Clark MacArthur, Pageau, Turris. Those were the, there were 6 overtimes and 5 different guys. Jadeveon Clowney plays football. Corey Conacher is who came to Ottawa. Good old Corey Conacher.
Oh, the song.
Yeah, there you go for Ben Bishop. And England has 2 teams left in the final four of the Champions League, Chelsea and Manchester City. So what's our total?
We got a total of 60 bucks.
Not bad, Danny.
60 bucks or 60 seconds of work, I'll see you
guys. There you go. you'd love it at your regular work if that's the way they paid
Absolutely.
You, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Jeff Bezos.
All right. Yeah, there you go. You're like the Amazon guy. Congrats, man. Really appreciate you listening. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the 60 bucks.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good day.
All right. Take care. All right. There we go. How'd you do, Eric?
I think I got like six out of 10. I don't understand. There are some days where the questions are like, what's 1 + 1? And then it's like 2. It's like, that's right. Other days are like, okay, quickly give me your recipe for cold fusion so I can power the world for free. You have to decide. Will the questions be easy or will they be? I just think since you got vaccinated,
yeah,
you've changed.
Have I? I've been, I'm on much.
There's just
I'm
an edge and a meanness to you.
All right, we'll do it again tomorrow. I'll make the question softer on a Friday. Is that better? Is that okay?
Thank you.
All right. Latest news coming up. We'll run down the scoreboard. Sens fall 3-2 to the Winnipeg Jets. All the details on that coming up. And we'll come back and revisit our early morning visit with Pierre McGuire next on TSN 1200.